good evening, and welcome to the Harry Brown Show. If you're a regular listener to the show, you can tell by my voice that I am not Harry Brown. Harry Brown is off on this holiday weekend, and I am Jim Babka, the president of the Downsize DC Foundation and DownsizeDC.org, and host of the Culture Repair Show, also heard on the Genesis Communications Network on Sunday afternoons at 4 p.m. Central Time. In fact, tomorrow I will have a very interesting guest, and we will talk about the creation and intelligent design debate and its ramifications, particularly for people who are of faith. And we'll be talking with somebody who's kind of an expert on that subject. But tonight, we're going to be welcoming, during the next segment, hopefully, Lou Rockwell of LouRockwell.com. And I'm very excited. This will be the first time I'm actually going to get to speak to Lou myself and ask him about his website and what they do. It's probably the most read libertarian website, so you're going to get some good libertarian insight. And if you read LouRockwell.com, you know what kind of content that they have there. You know that we're going to have a very interesting discussion tonight. You can call your friends and have them come listen as well to hear Lou Rockwell from LouRockwell.com, and that'll be coming up in the next segment. Well, you're going to want to be able to call tonight. You may want to get some questions in to Lou Rockwell, and if you want to do that, the number here is 1-800-259-9231. That's 1-800-259-9231. Or I'm going to give you an email address as well, but we're going to give preference to phone calls tonight. If you call, we're going to take those right away. You can email me tonight at comments, that's comments plural, at downsizedc.org. That's comments at downsizedc.org. And the reason we use downsizedc.org is I've already mentioned I am the president of the Downsize DC Foundation and downsizedc.org Incorporated. We've got some exciting stuff going on, and I'll talk a little bit about that late in the show. If we have the time, let's see how things go. Tonight, though, I want to start off with a blog entry from redstate.org. I read redstate.org. It's one of the blogs that I check out. It's some interesting information, if for nothing else, to see what the Republicans are thinking. Many of the people who are on the site are conservative, and so sometimes I end up agreeing with them. I particularly appreciate Mike Krampaski at that site, who gives very good information on what's going on in the campaign finance front. He's staunchly in support of the First Amendment and very much opposed to John McCain and Russ Feingold and the gang, who want to restrict your First Amendment free press and free speech rights. So, excuse me. By the way, I've got a little something in my throat here tonight. I'm sitting in Northeast Ohio as I'm speaking to you right now, and we had our first big snowfall this week, and so we've got all kinds of snow and it's cold and. And so I got a little bit of it in my throat, and so I apologize if I have to clear my throat a few times tonight. Please excuse me. Well, speaking of excuses, this article from redstate.org is called The Eight Inexcusables. Inexcusables, as in bad, not excusable. And it's written by a poster called Conservative Majority. And so, you know, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to do their typical liberal bashing here, but that's not the case. They got lost in last week's headlines on Representative Murtha and the Iraq War, the Post starts. But the House of Representatives passed a fairly consequential bill, the Deficit Reduction Act, H.R. 4241, to reduce the size and scope of the federal government by a vote of 217 to 215. Now, folks, this would normally be considered good news. Hey, you know, government is doing something to be reduced. The Republicans are stepping up to the plate after years of gorging themselves at the table. While they controlled Washington, both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, and growing the government at a very rapid clip, they have finally done something about the deficit. They have finally done something to rein in big government. Or so we're led to believe. It would save only $49.9 billion over 5 years, the Post continues. But nonetheless, it was the first attempt to address entitlements since 1997. Important thing to point out here. First attempt to address entitlements since 1997. Republicans have been in control of the House since 1995. They've done nothing to address entitlements. Such programs prove to be extremely difficult to reform because once enacted, the spending automatically flows to all who show up at the government's door meeting the eligibility requirements. Well, no duh. I mean, they're called voters, and that's who the Republicans have been trying to appeal to, too. When they went home on their Labor Day holiday, they went home telling people that they were delivering the goods to their districts. That was the message they took back. And then they've gotten some trouble. Tom DeLay said, we can't find anything else to cut. We have a lean government. That's where they got in trouble. Now, the poster, who calls himself conservative majority, is complaining because of moderate bedwetters ended up voting for the bill after changes. The final vote tally is somewhat misleading. Here are the 14 Republicans who maintain their opposition to the end, and he proceeds to list them. Now, I'm not familiar with most of these congressmen, and I can almost guarantee I'm not fond of most of these congressmen. They're not the least bit libertarian in their approach. They're not looking to downsize D.C. But two names jump out at on the list. One is Walter Jones of North Carolina's 3rd District, and the other is Ron Paul of Texas, 14th District. As listeners to this show knows, Ron Paul always votes for lesser government. So what was going on? Why would Ron Paul not vote for this bill? Well, we have Mr. Paul's answer. He writes, only in Washington, D.C. can a spending increase be called a spending cut, but that's exactly what happened. Congress passed a budget bill that merely shows the rate at which the rate at which some federal spending grows by a tiny percentage, and both parties acted as though a revolution had taken place. Republicans trumpeted the measure as a huge victory for fiscal conservatism, while Democrats were enraged by the supposed slashing of government programs. The uproar shows just how entrenched the spending culture has become on Capitol Hill. Even insignificant reductions in the rate of growth in federal spending are seen as earth-shattering. But if we're really serious about cutting federal spending, why not simply cut 10% from the 2006 budget? Good question, Congressman Paul. He goes on. Remember, the same Republicans claiming victory for slowing spending next year also passed the Medicare prescription drug bill, which will add over $50 billion to the federal budget in 2006 alone. Basically, they just got through introducing $49 billion worth of cuts that were not really cuts. They were slowdowns in the increase of spending. So the spending's still going to increase, but they decided to cut it back a little bit, to slow down on their growth just a little bit by $49 billion, but they already, with Medicare's increase of prescription drugs, wipes that completely out all by itself. Another $50 billion right there. So nobody who voted for the Medicare drug bill has any business talking about government spending. Neither do those who refuse to consider cutting one penny from the military and foreign aid budgets. You cannot conduct a foreign policy based on remaking whole nations using military force and pretend to operate a frugal government. Now, it's interesting because this poster over at redstate.org, who writes this post, the 8 Inexcusables, begins to take Walter Jones to task. And why does he take Walter Jones to task? Well, Walter Jones complained that there were a lack of cuts to foreign aid programs. That's a bad thing. And then he says this quote-unquote conservative is opposed to free trade agreements, opposed to winning the war in Iraq, opposed to tax cuts, which is not true, and now opposed to the very serious spending reduction bill in nearly a decade. They're calling for knocking Walter Jones off because he doesn't support the war, because he didn't support the cap to boondoggle, and because he wouldn't go along with this phony flim-flam bill that allegedly cut spending. 1-800-259-9231.
You're an adult, right? You're old enough to vote.
You've got a job and a car. Maybe you have a family and own a home. So why do the politicians treat you like a child?
At DownsizeDC.com, we believe you should be free to make your own decisions.
About your health care, your retirement, your children's education. At DownsizeDC.com, we don't trust the politicians. We believe in you.
We believe if you had the chance, you'd slash federal spending, put an end to government waste and corruption, and dramatically reduce your taxes today.
In short, we believe you'd downsize D.C.
Year after year, the federal government expands, meddling in every area of your life.
Make your own decisions. Visit DownsizeDC.com. That's DownsizeDC.com.
.com The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
The hour. This is the Harry Brown Show. 1-800-259-9231 or email me at comments, that's comments plural, at downsizedc.org. This is Jim Babka sitting in tonight for Harry Brown on this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. I hope your turkey day was wonderful. You know, as we went into that break, I was on a roll and I don't know what happened there. That's the very first time I've run into my own bumper. It's bad, bad, bad. Slapping my wrist here. All right. Well, let me wrap up with this redstate.org, the eight inexcusables, with another response from Congressman Ron Paul. The budget bill fails to address the root of the spending problem, this belief that Congress must continually create new federal programs and agencies. However, with the federal government's unfunded liabilities, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, projected to reach as much as $50 trillion, that's trillion with a T, folks, by the end of this year, Congress can no longer avoid serious efforts to rein in spending. Instead of a smoke and mirrors approach, Congress should begin the journey towards fiscal responsibility by declaring a 10% reduction in real spending. Not this holding back the growth stuff. That's not cuts, folks. I don't care how many times Republicans call. You know, Republicans in the old days, I mean, back when I was a kid, used to criticize Democrats for using that kind of language. It's just amazing to me. Followed by a renewed commitment to fund only those government functions that are consistent with the Constitution. And by the way, that would cut government by a whole lot more than 10%. Well, I know some of you are eager to hear from our next guest, and I am too. Lou Rockwell is the publisher, producer, I guess you will, the editor. That's probably the best phrase to give him, of LouRockwell.com, his namesake there. LouRockwell.com, and the author of the book Speaking of Liberty. He's also involved with the Mises Institute, which is a very well-read economics website, and they're reaching out and touching academia. Lou Rockwell is just doing some amazing work, and I am really excited to have him joining me on the show tonight. Lou, welcome to the Harry Brown Show.
Jim, it's great to be with you.
Well, good. Are you in California, am I understanding?
Yes, I am.
Are you getting a little vacation, or?
No, just doing some work out here in, with the Center for Libertarian Studies, but my workload continues wherever I am.
Yes.
It's very nice out here, of course.
And I reach you by email when I do reach you virtually any time of day. It seems like you are on the computer all day long.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're tied to it, aren't you?
Yeah, and people are always welcome to write me at LouRockwell@Mac.com.
LouRockwell@Mac.com. Well, there you heard it, folks. Well, we're getting to hear you tonight. In fact, they said that they had a funny way of putting it on the blog today when they announced your appearance here tonight. That you were the internet star. Radio is going to listen to the internet star, and your website is an incredible website. I would like to get a little background. I'd like to start, if we could, there. How long ago did LouRockwell.com get started?
About 6 years ago, and I thought there was room on a niche market for a libertarian drudge, and a more serious drudge, and so far, there seems to have been. There seems, so far as we can tell, and none of these independent organizations that attempt to serve our readership are—they've all got their problems. But so far as I can tell, it's the best read libertarian website in the world.
It certainly appears that way. How many people are reading your page every day?
Well, it's about hits are about 35,000 a month. I should have the latest statistics in front of me and. Which is the most inflated way of looking at things, the most conservative, the strictest way, is about 400,000 unique visitors a month.
400,000 unique visitors per month.
Yeah.
And then you guys also, I get it in my email inbox every day. How many people are subscribing?
That's a much smaller number, maybe 22,000.
Okay.
And anybody is welcome to do it and just have to sign up, no charge. And you get so that way you don't have to surf. It just comes right to you.
Exactly. You get if you subscribe to the page, it comes into your mailbox. You get the home page every day in your mailbox, and it's great because you know I'm busy doing things with Downsized DC. There might be a day or two, I'm sorry to confess this in front of you, where I miss reading Lou Rockwell, but I can go back to the email from a day or two ago and easily see what was available that day and get caught up. So you started it about 6 years ago. Did you start off 6 days a week at that point?
I did, and I must say I didn't fully think through the fact that that meant you could never take a vacation from it. But it all began with an email list that I had compiled of, I guess, about 800 or 900 people who, like me, opposed Clinton's war on Serbia, and that's really what started as in effect an anti-war email list. And then when I started the webpage, I emailed those people and to tell them about it, and that was the beginning.
And then it's just grown since then.
It has, and I think that the fact that we focus on war, which Murray Rothbard always said was the worst big government program. You know, sometimes I guess it's Joe Sobern who said that you can tell a conservative he's for big government programs if they're killing people. although I guess these days they're for big government programs, period, the conservatives.
Yes, they do appear to be. I don't know if you heard anything that I was talking about in the previous segment, but redstate.org was naming Ron Paul one of the 8 inexcusables who had the audacity to vote against this Deficit Reduction Act, H.R. 4241, which allegedly reduced the size and scope of the federal government. This is news to you, right?
The bill or the red state or the
website?
Well,
that the bill actually reduced the size.
Well, of course, it's all a trick, right? It's, it's another fraud. It's just another scam. And the Republicans, of course, turn out to put the Democrats to shame as big government spenders.
They really do. They really do.
On the other hand, that probably is more in tune with the actual history of the Republican Party versus his rhetoric, because whether we look at the Lincoln administration or the McKinley administration, Taft, all the Republican presidents were all, you know, for war and vast subsidies to corporate pals of the Republican Party, and it really reached its peak under Herbert Hoover, who as Rothbard showed, began the New Deal. I mean, all Roosevelt really did was continue the rotten interventionist policies that Hoover started. I will give Hoover one great piece of credit, however. He was very much a man of peace, very much anti-war, and ironically, he set up his Hoover Institution at Stanford to study war, revolution, and peace to see how we could bring about peace. Ironically, of course, the Hoover Institution is one of the big warmongering organizations in the world today, so I guess that's... happens to a lot of great men, Henry Ford and others who left money for what they, J. Howard Pugh, left money for what they thought were going to be libertarian or conservative purposes, and they get the money gets turned against their own ideals.
Well, I want to explore that a little bit when we come back. I also want to talk a little bit more about, you know, what you do at LouRockwell.com, so we'll do that when we come back. 1-800-259-9231 or comments at DownsizedDC.org. You can ask Lou a question.
This is Harry Brown. My book, Why Government Doesn't Work, provides libertarian solutions to many of today's thorny political problems. How to make America much safer from foreign attack while reducing the military budget dramatically. How to end the Social Security program and free us from that oppressive tax without leaving senior citizens holding the bag. How to reduce crime while reducing government. How to end the income tax immediately and cut the federal budget by over 90%. How a libertarian president could reduce government even without a libertarian Congress. Why Government Doesn't Work is now available for downloading at libertyfree.com for only $9.75. Just $9.75 for Why Government Doesn't Work. You can read the book on your computer screen or print it out and read it from your easy chair. You can get Why Government Doesn't Work tonight at libertyfree.com.
The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network.
You're listening to the Harry Brown Show on the Genesis Communications Network, but he is not here right now. I am Jim Babka, filling in tonight for Harry on this holiday weekend. I hope you had a great holiday. I had a fantastic holiday weekend. How about you, Lou? Did you have a good holiday?
Very nice. Thank you, yes.
Well, good. Now, when we went to the break, I do want to ask...
Of course, I'm constantly reminded this time of year of the fact that, you know, Thanksgiving is, of course, a war propaganda trick of the Lincoln administration, declared by Lincoln in Thanksgiving for the fantastic... success of the Union armies in killing so many people, and also designed to take people's focus off the fact that, of course, the first Thanksgiving was actually in Virginia, that is in the South, and to focus everybody on Massachusetts, so everything good is in the North, everything evil is in the South. And, of course, even before the Anglos in Virginia, we had if we're looking at Europeans, we had, of course, the Spanish, long before the English, were giving thanks to God. Anyway, our modern Thanksgiving has its aspects of government myth about it.
That's interesting. And, you know, that's a topic, that's one of the various topics that comes up regularly on your page, kind of a unique facet of your page. You talk about Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, and you the folks that write for your site have a very different take on that subject.
Well, I would say most people tend to think that Lincoln was not a good guy, that he was, in effect, a dictator. That he launched an aggressive war after getting the Southerners to be dumb enough to fire the first shot at the tax collection office in Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor. And that's what Fort Sumter was, a tax collection office. Nobody was killed. They shot a horse. But they shouldn't have done it. In my view, the South should not have tried to secede, even though they had the political right to secede. It was they had no chance of anything but the disaster that came about. So I think it was, I think that was a mistake. But Lincoln was, you know, was a dictator. You only have to look what he did in the North. Forget what he did in the South. He closed thousands of newspapers. Anytime any newspaper expressed any criticism of his policies, it was immediately closed down. He set up military courts all throughout the North where the regular courts were functioning and had people arrested, tried in secret trials, jailed, in secret for the crime of opposing his policies. You even had, and this sounds like something out of Stalin or Lenin, there were even people who were jailed for the crime of, get this, being present when the policies of Lincoln were criticized and not defending them.
Why?
So it was, there were a lot of people arrested. They gloried in the fact that there was one congressman, Clement Blandringham, from Ohio, was critical of Lincoln. Lincoln arrested him and exiled him for criticizing him.
Yes,
so
that's right.
This is, I think it's not a good guy. As to slavery, it was, of course, a crime and a sin. However, you know, we're the only ones who ended it with a war. I mean, everybody else ended it peacefully. And always, of course, it never should have taken place. It should have been ended much sooner than it was ended. But to kill 600,000 people and devastate an entire region, so I think it was, you know, it was not a good thing. On the other hand, it did do what Lincoln and his pals wanted. It abolished the Republic of the Founding Fathers. It erected a new and much more powerful central government. And it brought about much more inflation, much more big government, big business partnership, suppression of civil liberties, at least temporary abolition of the gold standard. Lincoln established the Department of Agriculture. He established the first income tax. Did a lot of very bad stuff. And while it's true that the government was smaller after the Civil War, by the way, that's a misnomer too, but the government was smaller after the Civil War, it never went back to the pre-war size. And as Robert Higgs has talked about in his great books, Crisis and Leviathan, especially, government benefits from crisis. It grows fat on crisis. And while it may shrink back some after a crisis, it never gives up all the power and the money that it seized from the people. So that Lincoln, the whole Lincoln regime marked a very, very bad, a bad step in American history. And I mentioned civil war. You know, a civil war is where two sides vie for control of the central government, as in the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s, the English Civil War in the 1600s. This was a war of secession, like the American, American revolutionaries didn't want to take over London and run England. They just wanted out.
Right.
So same with the Southern states. They didn't want to take over Washington and run the North. They just wanted out. Although I think it was a mistake, and I think as we see in every war, I mean, the same things happen in the South as happened in the North, and every country during a war, the worst people take over, they create nationalism, a belligerent nationalism, they suppress civil liberties, they had a draft, they had terrible inflation, and there were no states' rights in the South during the war either. I mean, it was the nationalists who took over, and the real states' rights people were marginalized and didn't like what was going on at all. So I think it's a good lesson that war is always a problem. Mises talks about the fact that even a just war, justly fought, war of defense, you're under attack, you have to do it. This is not a good thing because your own government grows and takes away your freedom. Even if you're victorious, it's a bad thing.
You don't
ever want to encourage war, let alone, of course, do what Mr. Bush has done, launch a war of aggression against a country that never did anything to us. And I'm reminded, as I read an interesting article today from a Vermont newspaper, that this is the first charge at Nuremberg, the first war crime, the launching an aggressive war. This was, the United States declared, a crime against humanity, and I would agree, it is a crime against humanity. Too bad George Bush did it.
1-800-259-9231 if you want to ask Lou Rockwell a question. We're going to be touching on a number of interesting topics, not just the Civil War. You know, Lou, when we were headed into the break, you mentioned about Pew, Ford, Hoover, you know, these big institutions that were trying to investigate peace or whatever, kind of being used for internationalists or war or other big government purposes. Why do you think that happens?
Well, I don't know. It seems to me it's a great topic for a PhD dissertation. For somebody to really look into this, I know a little bit more about what happened to the Pew Foundation, Pew Trust, than I do about some of the others. J. Howard Pugh was the owner or the CEO and owner of much of Sun Oil Company, Sunoco. He was a strong supporter of libertarian ideas, strong supporter of Ludwig von Mises, of Foundation for Economic Freedom, and Grove City College, and many, many great institutions. The Reverend James Fifield in Los Angeles and his wonderful magazine Faith and Freedom, which was anti-war and pro-freedom. A wonderful guy and a wonderful magazine that Murray Rothbard, and he was a columnist for. So Pew, a great businessman, great entrepreneur, he thought he was setting up things in an ironclad way. He wrote a long holographic instruction about what his money was to be used for, and that is in his own handwriting, and what it was not to be used for. And about 10 years after his death, the people he'd entrusted, in effect, tore this up and have just become a very left-wing.
1-800-259-9231 if you want to talk to Lou Rockwell here on The Harry Brown Show.
The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
One of the fun things about doing the Harry Brown Show is that you get a dose of culture. I enjoy being able to listen to that bumper music that he provides for us. This is the Harry Brown Show, and I'm your host, Jim Babka, sitting in for Harry Brown on this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Harry's taking holiday and leaving me the honor of being in this chair, and I'm getting the thrill of talking to Lou Rockwell of LouRockwell.com. fame, also the author of the book Speaking of Liberty. And Lou, you are also affiliated with the Mises Institute, correct?
Yes, I have the great honor to be the head of the Institute, and I started it in 1982 because I felt that the ideas of Ludwig von Mises and Murray Rothbard and the other Austrian school economists were not getting the attention they ought to have gotten, not only because truth deserves to be told, and because these are very great men who we all need role models, we need heroes, we don't just need abstract ideas, but we need heroes who inculcate these ideas. But I thought that I thought there was a need for an organization to specifically promote the Austrian School of Economics, and especially the work of Mises. I had the honor of knowing him a little bit, and knew his widow very, very well. She served as our chairman for the first 12 years of the Institute. And
now, what do you do at the Mises Institute? How do you honor their memory and get the word out about Austrian economics?
Well, first, I'd like to advise anybody to take a peek at our website, Mises.org, and this is M-I-S-E-S.org, which is the best-read institutional economics site in the world, so far as we can tell, read better than the Federal Reserve, even better than the U.N. A lot of fun to look at some of these rankings. It's a tremendous amount of material on this. There's a daily article you can subscribe to for free. There's a vast catalog of books and memorabilia of interest to people who are interested in the pure free market. There are many books, more than 400 hours of free video and audio, thousands of articles, a huge study guide. I mean, it's just a vast resource, and so this is one thing we do. We also hold teaching programs, specifically, most prominently, the Mises University every summer for students who come from all over the world to Alabama in the summertime, so you know they're serious, to study Austrian economics. We have two scholarly journals, the Review of Austrian Economics, the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics. Originally it was the Review of Austrian Economics, then it became a Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics. The Journal of Libertarian Studies, we have a book review, the Mises Review, we have a monthly newsletter, The Free Market, which starting, by the way, January is going to be free to anybody who requests it. You can just go on online and request it, or you can phone us at 1-800-OF-MISES. And we're glad to add you. This is starting in January to the free market list for free.
Go ahead and give out that 800 number one more time.
It's 1-800-OF-MISES, M-I-S-E-S.
And we have an 800 number to give out as well. It's 1-800-259-9231. Get you on the show to ask Lou a question. We have Bob in Illinois joining us tonight. Welcome to the Harry Brown Show, Bob.
Hi, you guys. Lou, I really enjoy your site, and I wanted to ask you about this recent announcement that the Federal Reserve is no longer going to calculate and publish M3, and also if you could discuss about what causes inflation. I think these are kind of two related items.
Well, it's a great question, and of course there's a lot of obfuscation on what is inflation. Inflation is an increase in the money supply, and it has many, many bad effects. First of all, causes prices to go up. It tends to punish savers and to reward speculators. It tends to punish the poor and the retired. And it, worst of all, brings on the business cycle. Recessions and depressions, artificial booms and busts are not a natural product of the free market. They're a result of a central bank like the Federal Reserve. And in fact, Ludwig von Mises in 1912, before the Fed was founded, in his great book, Theory of Money and Credit, showed why such an institution would be so damaging to society, not only because our dollar has got, is worth about 4 cents of what it was when the Fed was founded, but because of this whole series of booms and busts, it also enables the government to fund itself, its wars, its welfare, and all its spying and all the other rotten things it does, in a way that it couldn't get away with if it had to actually directly tax us or borrow without a printing press. So you think of the Federal Reserve as just the government having a counterfeiting press. They print up the money, and of course it's great for the counterfeit and not so great for the people getting the money, especially those who tend to get it later in the process when the inflation has taken place. We have
more inflation
today than...
Who gets it early and who gets it late?
Well, first of all, and the government itself and the government contractors. So it's the military-industrial complex. You know, it's Lockheed, it's Martin Marietta, it's Halliburton, it's doctors getting Medicaid payments, and anybody getting dough from the government itself. And people who don't get dough from the government, there's a transfer of wealth that takes place from regular people who are not parasites to the parasites. That's what we can think of, the government as a parasite, and the rest of us are the host, except for those people, of course, who constitute the government, and things like the military companies that live off the government and live off taxation.
Okay,
the public schools, right? I mean, there's many aspects to government in our country.
We want to take up the other part of Bob's question when we come back from the break. Bob called 1-800-259-9231, and you can do the same, or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. This is Jim Babka filling in for Harry Brown. Imagine you're on trial. The charge against you, violating one of the hundreds of laws Congress passes each year. You rise in your defense and say, "Your Honor, I didn't know about this law." How will the judge respond? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I think you know the answer. The judge will reply, "Ignorance of the law is no excuse." So what's the excuse for your representatives in Congress? Their ignorance is even worse. They don't even read many of the laws they pass. At DownsizedDC.org, we're proposing a simple but powerful idea, the Read the Bills Act, to force Congress to read the laws they pass. Why? Because we believe the federal government is way too big. We want to slow the politicians down. We want to reduce the size and power of the federal government, and we want them to sweat the details, just like you do. Check out DownsizedDC.org, because ignorance is no excuse, even for a congressman.
The Harry Brown Show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Radio Network.
Well, we're almost done with the first hour of the Harry Brown Show tonight, and I'm your guest host, Jim Babka. 1-800-259-9231. Or you can email us at comments@downsizedc.org. I am the president of the Downsize DC Foundation and downsizedc.org. You just heard the commercial for the Read the Bills Act during the break. It's a big initiative at downsizedc.org. And I do a show right here on the Genesis Communications Network. I will be on tomorrow afternoon, Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. Central Time. You can catch that, and I hope you will tune in. We're going to have a very interesting guest tomorrow, Ed Brayton from Dispatches from the Culture Wars, a blog, saintcynic.com/blog. He'll be joining me. We'll be talking about evolution and intelligent design. And we'll be getting to another question here in just a moment that came in via email. But when we went to the break, we were dealing with a question that came in from Bob and from Illinois who called in. And he asked about the publishing of the M3 money supply, Lou. What does, first of all, for all the laymen in the audience, what does that mean, and what's the significance of, Bob asked, of it being pulled off of the Fed's website?
Well, it used to be years ago a Federal Reserve statistic, M1, that as much as a federal government statistic could actually tell you anything, told you about the money supply, but because of various regulatory changes that have taken place, there really is no it's not easy to determine what the federal government is actually doing to the dollar. We know they're doing bad stuff, but how fast they're doing it and the exact effects are very difficult to tell. So now they've got many, many different measures of money. But yes, without any notice, they just abolished one of them, M3. And I would like to direct people to an article on my website by Sean Corrigan, S-E-A-N, C-O-R-R-I-G-A-N. He had a wonderful article on the murder of M3. Just look up Sean Corrigan among the columnists, and it's his most recent article. And I think that he thinks that they're attempting to disguise some very bad things that are going to be happening in the monetary world. And, you know, whether that's correct or not, it's a counterfeiting press. They are doing illegitimate things, and they don't want to tell you about it. It's It's a, I work, once had the honor of working for Ron Paul as his chief of staff in Washington. And if I didn't know this before, this is in the late 1970s, I certainly learned it there, that everything they're doing in Washington, they're ripping you off. I mean, somebody is making big bucks off of every single thing they do, no matter what their public excuse is. And that is especially true of the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve is probably the worst thing domestically the government does. And it's dishonest, it's distortive, it's unconstitutional, it wrecks our prosperity. However, it's very good for the government and government contractors, the banking system itself. They all benefit at the expense of the rest of us. It's a rotten system. And if you want to know more about it, there's a wonderful book by Murray Rothbard called The Case Against the Fed. Like all of Murray's stuff, very easy to read. The short book. It's on Mises.org. You can read it for free, download it in your computer, or buy it for just $5. But if you want to know about what the Federal Reserve does, why it's evil, and why we ought to get rid of it, that's the place to start.
Okay, Mises.org to get the Murray Rothbard book, and it's full of resources for you folks, M-I-S-E-S.org. And if you go to LouRockwell.com, right on the left-hand side, you click columnist, go look for Sean Corrigan on that list, and you can read The Murder of M3. We'll be back after the news. You got a few minutes, but don't go away.